Strap yourself in and adjust your mirrors for maximum visibility. It's time for Traveling Tunes with Dr. Kirsten Zemke.
Good morning to you, Dr. Kirsten Zemke.
Good morning. Very special day for lovers and for those who celebrate the death of Captain Cook.
It's a combo there. Well, I hope everyone gets a big old smooch on the lips for Valentine's Day.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's your love language.
Now, this morning we're talking about the Rhodes piano.
See, now that my love language would be that. So let me go backwards. So now if you want to make music, most people do it digitally on their computer, right? It has all sorts of different sounds. And some people might notice there's piano, electric piano, and some might actually name it Rhodes. Because then when you go back a little farther, we have what's called synthesizers, which is one keyboard, but it can make many sounds. And even those might have piano sound, trying to sound like a organic piano. But they might have a Fender Rhodes sound. So back in the 70s, people were trying to make, pianos are huge and big and hard to move. And so before we had synthesizers and stuff, they're trying to make electric pianos that you could move and take with you. And there's a couple main kinds, and one of the main ones is called a Fender Rhodes and has a beautiful bell-like tone, which is why I feel like all the other synthesizers and digital creators now actually try to capture this one weird sound that this sort of early attempt at electric piano had.
So this is almost like the godfather of early electric pianos, right? I mean, what role did it? I feel like it's one of those instruments which has played a huge part in a fusion of like jazz and rock and funk. What can you give us?
Yeah.
What can you tell us about its background in those genres?
Well, so it was in the 70s that it started. It came out in. And so just anyone who was a really great player, like we're going to have some Stevie Wonder today, like Elton John, anyone who actually played it got one, whether they were gifted one, and they started incorporating it into their music. But I guess is what I said, what's funny is it doesn't sound like a piano, and it doesn't even sound like other electric pianos. It sounds like a Fender Rhodes. It's very bell sort of sound. So definitely in the 70s was the big use of it. And I guess, like you said, they weren't quite sure, are we going to use this for jazz? We're going to use this for funk? It's not quite rock. I mean, although the very famous The Doors, Rider in the Storm, used that in the beginning. But, wasn't a super rocky sound and just sort of throwing it at everything, I guess, to sort of find where it fits.
Well, what song should we start with this morning, Kirsten?
Well, let's start with Stevie, 1973. There you go. That's it.
Oh, Stevie Wonder. Yes.
A boy's born in Hot Dive, Mississippi, surrounded by for world that ain't so pretty. His parents give him love and affection to keep him strong, moving in the right direction, living just enough. Just enough for the city.
Is there something in particular that makes the Fender Rhodes, like the tone, particularly suited for the rhythmic groove of funk and dance?
Well, I don't know. I think it's kind of weird. Like, it's not a piano. So they designed it to be like a piano in that it actually has keys, has little hammers that hit something inside. So in a piano, it's a string.
Yes.
This piano is actually like a big giant harp, and when you open one up, big giant harp, and the hammers hit these strings. Now, in the Fender, it's metal bars called tines, T-I-N-E. So it's like a completely different mechanism, and that's why it sounds like bells, I guess, because it's like hitting these metal bars. There was another one at the time called the Wurlitzer, which unfortunately I had and always felt second rate. Although some people now idolize the Wurlitzer sound too, because it's different again. Because in the Wurlitzer, it was like reeds. So it was a little, I actually think the Wurlitzer was better for like rock and roll. I played in some covers bands. Whereas, like you said, the Fender has this, it's so dreamy, so it's better for like the 70s things that are sort of you know, like funk and sort of prog, you know, anything that's got a little more dreamy quality, you know, whereas I think, yeah, the Warp Tour was better for plunky, like, you know, rock and roll.
Did Stevie, although, you know, did Stevie Wonder become pretty attached to his Fender Rhodes, or would he jump around between different...
Well, because he was such a keyboard master, he got given a lot. I think he was sponsored by Fender for a while.
Yeah.
So then it's like, well, is it really good? Is it because he's just sponsored?
So good.
So, you know, if you had a new keyboard, you'd give one to Stevie, and he has a couple other synths he's associated with, but he definitely, especially on this album, this era, was playing it. And I guess sort of partly established it, right? Because this is right in the beginning. And now they famously, oh my God, they were so heavy. They were really, in fact, one kind that sort of had a, it was built into the case and you could screw the legs in at the bottom when you moved it. Apparently it's 59 kilos.
59 kilos?
Yeah.
Someone sticks through saying it takes 8 strong people to move a grand piano, so you can understand why.
Oh, yeah.
Understand why there would be this drive to create something smaller and easier to get around.
That's right. So especially if you're in a band and you're gigging, but still, have a thought for your keyboard player that has to put this in the back of the car, and it needs an amp.
Yes.
And speakers. You can hear, because it's actually playing these like metal bars, you can hear it a little bit without it. One of the things I read said it's equivalent to electric guitar. You can hear it, you know, if someone's just jamming on it, but you certainly couldn't play a gig or perform. You have to then also have the amps and stuff. And they're a little shorter. An organic piano is 88 keys, very famous, 88. These have 73 or sometimes 59. You can get different octave ones.
Now, how would you say the use of the Rhodes in 70s funk, like that track, shaped the development of later dance genres like disco and house and electronic music?
100%. Then it becomes associated with that. And like I said, every organ or keyboard that you buy is going to now have a Rhodes sound. And anyone you digitally, if you're downloading sort of keyboard sounds, it's so iconic. And yeah, like you said, I guess because of that 1970s period, it became so associated with it. Like, I guess let's play Jamiroquai. Yeah. So this is 96, but as you said, he's now having it. He wants it to sound like the 70s. So this is English acid jazz funk band, calls it.
I had a friend that caught Jamiroquai when they last played Australia, which I think might have been last year, and they said was one of the best shows they've ever seen.
Wow! So you can hear the keyboard there. Like you said, now it's harkening back to Stevie, you know? You want it to sound like 1970s.
Are there any, like, on the technique front, for people that are playing, like, funk, are there any techniques that funk musos are using to, like, maximize the percussive sound of the Rhodes?
Well, yeah, as you can hear in this, it's basically playing it more like a rhythm instrument. You know, it's like a guitar chord banging it through, or sorry, I'm coughing here. So he's playing as a rhythm instrument, just playing chords and banging them to the beat. So sort of keep the whole rhythm section going. So you can hear the bass moving all over the place, but it's because you got the piano acting kind of like the guitar, just heading that chord to establish where the band is. I don't know if you guys remember this guy, but he always wears massive hats, so you guys can be jamming around. But it's so cool to hear that he's still playing, and apparently politically he's really cool and doing a lot of good stuff. And so now this would be a weird synth. But again, echo, trying to harken back to that 70s sound, isn't it?
What makes the Fender Rhodes particularly suited to, like, this kind of groove? Is there anything about it in particular?
I guess it sounds kind of affected, right? Like, it sounds, I mean, you can put it through phasers. It can have a vibrato or tremolo it has on it. So So I guess it is very funk in that it's that nexus of so real, so visceral, so human, so body, but also so technological and electronic, you know, like that's why disco was so funny, because it was ultimate sort of body music, right? It was about sweaty bodies and sex in the club, but yet it sounded like the it didn't sound like computers or robots, you know? So it brought this humanness to what could have been really sort of austere digital. And, you know, some of the early electronic artists did sound very computery. But like this doesn't, like, it swings, you know, it doesn't hit the beat on the beat like an electronic drum machine, you know, would just be on the one. So it's that cool blend of the human and the digital interface. Ooh, it's the interface.
Broadly speaking, we're talking super broadly here. How would you say the resurgence of interest in vintage instruments has affected the perception and use of the Fender Rhodes today?
Well, I mean, like I said, because people, you can access it in your bedroom right now.
Yeah.
But there is the market for, you know, people finding the old instruments. They're, you know, they're real heavy, and you got to get them, you know, checked and made sure that they're fixed and stuff. And then, of course, there's now different iterations. I think they just released the MK83 or something, you know, like, you know, trying to sort of capture that. But I think part of the magic was that particular era, that space where rock and jazz and funk, we're all playing with it.
Yes.
And putting it into all these weird, I think I didn't mention the Doobie Brothers and 10cc and Steely Dan and just, you know, just so many different, it really sort of dominated then, and just bringing that sound. But yeah, if anyone has one in their garage, honestly, post it up on BFM. Somebody would probably buy it, you know, because they do need, you know, they're heavy and they do need to be checked. And then you do need the amp and the speaker, you know, and they're not MIDI, for those of you who know what that is. So it's really on its own, you know, you can't connect it up to other stuff. So, but yeah, they're iconic.
Now, Kirsten, the Fender Rhodes is just sort of sitting in that time period where there's a transition happening from analog to digital. I mean, how did that sort of transition from analog to digital affect the Fender Rhodes' role in music production?
Well, I mean, I think, like I said, it became too easy because you could just press your button and use it. Mm. And then part of the reason the Fender Rhodes was so good is that it was an actual piano. Mm. You could press harder on your key and it would sound louder. I don't know if people know, with these sort of some of the modern synthesizers, and obviously digitally, you know, you're just saying, you're just telling the computer to play an A and play it for this many seconds. But when you touch something on a piano, you get that sort of response, like plucking a string. And so because it was still had that analog element of touch sensitivity and the keys.
So it's a mix of both. It's both an analog instrument and also a digital. So it's, okay. All right.
Yeah, and so that's why it sounds so real and so visceral, even though it's electric. Sorry, I forgot what your original question was. Touch sensitivity of the keys. Yeah. But yeah, that's why they're really special, you know, and you know, computers are always, although we should probably stop teaching them, you know, they're always trying to sound more human. Mm. We've got to stop teaching them how to do that.
Yeah. But, they're so good, aren't they? Okay, what should we go out on, Kirsten?
So this is a weird track. So there was a band called the Beastie Boys that were unusually a white hip-hop band, but really accepted in the sort of OG hip-hop community because they were around, they were in New York, they're paying their dues, they're playing the gigs with folks. And in 1992, they did a more sort of experimental, sort of eclectic album. One of the band members, oh, there you can hear the great keyboard there. I swear that sounds like a Wurlitzer, but I can only go by what I'm reading people say. But anyway, he's MCA, one of the band members. He actually died really young. He died in 2012 at age 47. But he was into Buddhism, and he. So here's this sort of naughty white boy comedy hip hop band doing the spacey Namaste.
Anyone out there, I can strongly recommend. This is off Check Your Head, but their instrumental album. Is it the In Sound from Way Out? I think that's that is also worth having in the collection. Great one.
So I'm hearing more Rhodes now. It's sounding more Rhodes to me now. Because, of course, people will put FX and phasers on it in the mix.
Yeah.
Swirling images through my mind. Like a world.
So those of you who know the Beastie Boys, this is such an odd track for them.
And I stand at the edge. I love the Beastie Boys. This was actually, Kirsten, can I just say, it was from the list of songs you sent through suggesting the examples of the Fender Rhodes. It was such a hard list to cut down. I was like, oh, I just want to play all these songs. They're all so great.
It's such a beautiful sound, and like we've been talking about, I guess such great artists then like to play with it and experiment with it in so many kind of different genres, but yet it also has a sound in time as well, like it's doing both.
Sunlight begins to climb.
Because who would have thought, oh, I'm gonna do a Buddhist chant thing on Namaste, and the thing I read about the song was that this is before Namaste had been ruined. When he was doing it, it was still, you know, it was quite innovative and iconic that he's putting in this track. But who said, no, it needs a Fender Rhodes sound, you know, like just such an interesting mix. You know, he didn't go for sitar or, you know, sort of a Buddhist iron bells or something.
I guess on this front, we've got a few different like cultural contexts happening with the use of the Fender Rhodes.
Yeah, but none of them would be what you would say I'm gonna use this for my Buddhist meditation.
Yeah.
But yeah, you can hear more Stevie. You know, he's going for that funk disco somehow with his meditation, you know? And now I really want to buy one.
You want to buy one?
Are they, yeah.
I can't imagine they're cheap because they're probably quite, you know.
They're a pain. They're a pain in the butt to have. I know. I mean, I've had electric pianos.
I think you deserve one though, Kirsten.
Thank you. You know, thank you so much. I'm going to tell my checkbook that. It's too much.
All right. The Fender Rhodes, everyone. Hey, Kirsten, what a great edition of Travelling Tunes this morning. Thank you so much for speaking with us.
And we'll see you next week. Yeah, we're back on track.
We'll see you next week. Cheers, okay. Mate. Bye.
All right, bye.
My fear was just a shadow. And then a voice spoke in my head. And she said, dark is not the opposite of light, it's the absence of light. And I thought to myself, she knows what she's talking about. And for a moment I knew what it was all about.
That was Traveling Tunes with Dr. Kirsten Zimke.